ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
The Herald of Truth broadcast is on the air, a program of spirit and truth dedicated to teaching the way of God more perfectly. These broadcasts contain keys to help unlock knowledge and reveal hidden truths of the Bible in these last days. Christians called to a higher level of understanding will be given Bible-based solutions to their personal as well as national problems. They will want to find out more about their part in God's plan. Our mailing address is Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas 72602, and will be given again at the end of this broadcast.
We're thinking today as we turn the subject, the sons of light in their journeys, children of light. There's no question that this is one of the most significant marking emblems of our race to be found in the background of the testimony or tradition and in the history of the Scriptures. We have talked to you about the early migrations of our society and civilization as we migrated out to the high plateaus of the upper countries of Asia. We've talked about the location of the flood and how in the great Tarim Basin today, the remnants of the catastrophe that hit that land in the day that God's judgment fell upon those forces of world orders then existent that sought by mongrelization and fierce and vicious activities against your race to destroy and absorb it. There was no point that was too far to proceed to by the powers of darkness to eliminate the sons of the eternal God from the earth. If you go back into the panorama of the ancient records of the Turanian peoples that dwelt in the vicinity of your race, they tell in their ancient books, even like the Shu King and the others, which come out of ancient China, about their design to eliminate the sons of the Most High from the earth. And the only way they could see to do this with ease would be to absorb them, intermingle with them, and no longer let them be a people. So one of the earliest evidences that we have concerning your race and the strategies of those that were against it being developed in the earth was the attempt to absorb it, intermingle with it, mongrelize it, and thus eventually overwhelm it till it ceased to exist. When we look back over the last 7,400 years of the history of our race, we can see how the hand of God has definitely provided and preserved this people for the kingdom which he intends to build. Just think, from one man's family to one-sixth of the earth's population, and with all the strategies and with all of the plan and conspiracy, which operates out of the design of our enemies, they have not destroyed our race. We're one-sixth of the world's population. Now we can well say that among that six, there are those whose blood have been fused with the blood of other races. That may be so, but we're talking about one-sixth of the world's population being the white Christian nations of the Western world, identified both by their race and their faith and their background. And the great preponderance of this one-sixth is the pure white race strain of the household of the Adamic race, and most specifically through the house of Shem. That God not only preserved and provided that this would be preserved, but he created and instilled deep down within you a great spiritual driving force to the cognition of these demands, which he has purposed to prove and establish with you as a people. For instance, if you go through the travels of your race, you'll discover that your race passed through the steppes of ancient Asia, it passed through ancient India, it stayed, it ruled, it traveled on. It existed in the areas of Mesopotamia. It built great symbols of its power in the land of Ur, the Chaldees, and then it traveled on to remain still a race and still a people. We have moved all over the face of the earth. There is virtually no part of the earth where we cannot trace our race, both by the identity of the things which it taught and which it believed, and by the identity of its ability in that declaration to leave its marks and to leave the symbols of its wisdom peculiar to you and to your race. And still, in all the declarations that follow, we remain, because of certain spiritual forces instilled within us, a separate people. We were not absorbed, we were not mongrelized, we were not taken over, because this was a part of the eternal will of God that was planted in your society. I think that this is a significant thing for us to understand in our own time. For never has there been a period where a greater attempt is being made by the powers of darkness and the pagan societies round about to destroy the white Western Christian civilization that follows your race and has been built by it. This design calls for an attempt to intermingle the bloodstreams of your race and to make it perfectly acceptable among the people that constitute that race to accept the concept of flowing the world together into one common racial stream. In fact, this is one of the major projects of the United Nations today. It is a part of the design of a communist world, and I believe that no instrument today is more useful to them for the accomplishment of their objectives than the Organization of the United Nations. When we point out this institution rising to its positions of influence and power in our time, we are looking at a satanic attempt to make a counterpart for God's kingdom. In other words, they are building an institution and organization for the domination of the world, but they at the same time give lip service to principles that they think are perfectly acceptable. They continually talk about the misused word democracy, and they continually play down any concepts of individual nationalism or greatness that would be built around the concept of the world republic. They do not like, my friends, the carrying forward of an idea which in its national origin would keep a nation in separate or preserve a racial separation. The design of the world order is to bring about a great metropolitan, heterogeneous mass of societies and peoples, which would be dominated by a strategy which they have designed, a super bureaucracy of those which are the intellectual superiors by their declaration of all the peoples of Earth. Preeminently, these designs are being carried out, and we have today a group of individuals who, with a pseudo-intellectualism, have fallen for this strategy, or they have been elevated to positions of power because of the financial and economic manipulation of those that have sought to carry this on. The program of God's kingdom remains unchanged from the day that it was first placed on the earth in the formation of the Adamic race, the offspring of the Most High. It remains unchanged in the purpose of the Most High that that nation that should rise and that race which he established should eventually become the administrative force throughout all the earth, that it was going to eventually override all darkness, all superstition, and all ignorance, that it was going to establish righteous administration on the basis of divine law, that it would be an instruction and it would teach to the ends of the earth knowledge, wisdom, and truth, that there would be no other channel for the world to receive except as it came through the media of the children of the Most High God. Now this, in its very beginning, requires that there be something that your race possesses that no other people upon the face of the earth possess. It is not enough that we say you are the only white race upon the face of the earth. That might be a marked identification because you are white. There is a difference also in the offspring of the Most High or the Adamic race, because any student of phrenology and any medical scientist could determine today the differences in the races by the identification of the cranium structure, and that, of course, affects the fact that you are marked as an offspring of the Most High, and that is something that can be established by the appearance of the identification. But there is a quality even more important and vital than that that you possess that are possessed by no other peoples on the face of the earth. When we refer to this, it is not a point of thinking that is developed or designed to give a person a exploded vision of their own abilities. It is not something to create a pride that some people might call a false pride. But it is intended that you do know what you possess. There is absolutely nothing wrong with the pride of truth. When people lose pride in their God-given developed blessings, in their capacities to think the thoughts of God because they are his offspring, when they lose pride in their father and pride in their family, that's the beginning of the loss of racial self-respect. It is a significant thing that we may identify the marked differences of our race from the very earliest hours of biblical history. We would tell you that the 10th chapter of the book of Genesis is a very excellent chapter to read. We recommend that you read a Fenton version of the scriptures if you possess a copy, but we can assure you that it's a most enlightening story. For there, as the sons of Japheth, coming down out of the high Tamir Plateau countries and the areas of the earthquakes and the floods which had driven them forth upon the earth, and it tells you there concerning the sons of Japheth that involved Javan, Tarshish, and others, and it says, and these sons of Japheth, when they came forth, they went forth after their languages, and after their tribes, among the heathen, and along the coastal countries, and the coastal cities, and among the heathen of the earth. Now you turn over to the story concerning Shem, and it tells you that Shem is the father of Heber, and all the children of Heber are descended from Shem, and the word Heber means colonizer, and it is talking about the peoples who are called Hebrews, which people you are, every white man. on the face of the earth today has predominantly come down through the lines of Heber. Almost all of the other lines that descended from any part of the sons of Ham or Japheth were absorbed eventually, and in the struggles of time have been absorbed. But the children of Shem have carried down the dynasty and destiny of the kingdom of the Most High God. If this is not an important thing, and every once in a while we find some clergyman who said that genealogies are not important, that these are vain genealogies. They seek to establish this by citing the scriptural verse concerning the unimportance of vain genealogies. And I agree with them. It's absolutely unimportant to search out vain genealogies. But I think it's a very important thing that you understand divinely ordained, spiritually identified genealogy. For if you turn to the scripture, you will note that in the book of Matthew and the book of Luke, one of the things we discover here is that they're running down the genealogy of Jesus Christ. You say, why is that? Because they want to show that he came from a pure strain and that his physical forebearer in Mary and the household to which she was joined was racially pure, the line of kingship and of the covenant. But they didn't just stop there. They didn't pause, my friends, with the house of David, to whom by earth connection he would be the rightful administrative ruler. They went from David all the way back down to Shem, the son of Noah, and then they go down from Noah to Seth, and they go from Seth to Adam to prove that this is the Adamic race, and this is the race line of which Christ is born after the flesh. Now, if it's important for Christ, it must be equally and more important for me. It is the most significant thing that we recognize that all through the book of that we call the Holy Bible, which is the book of the generations of Adam, his history, according to the fifth chapter of Genesis, we have these identifying factors of the race which were called the sons of light and the children of the Most High. We were called the children of Indra. We were called the children of Yahweh. We were called the children of Amun-Re, the children of Osiris. But always, it is the God of light. Symbolically, pagans who described this did not understand, and they did not know what was involved in all the prophecies and all the developments of this identification of the word life. They knew that we had certain wisdom and certain understanding, and that it was tied to a measure of heavenly bodies, and it was tied to a concept of our destiny. I think it most significant that every place where we have found in archaeological evidence and record the testimony of your race and its migrations and its travels, they referred to you as the white children of the Most High, the God of the outer universe. Whether this was in Babylonian history, or whether it came out of ancient Chinese history, or whether it came from the upper steppes of Asia. From the writings of great antiquity that we find now, from the ancient city of Lhasa in the steppes of Tibet, they tell about how they moved through the earth and traveled the children of the great Gautama, tall, white Manu. No wonder to those peoples of the upper steppes the word Manu meant man. They didn't call themselves Manu. You were Manu. The white race came through. In fact, some of the things which are like marked by this are some of the marks that you left. For instance, high up in Tibet, we have what's called the Dole. Now, the Do Ring is a great circle of monster stones. These stones weigh about 375 pounds, or 375 tons to 400 tons apiece. This great Do Ring in Tibet, the Tibetans said they did not build it. They said the tall white Manu that came out of the Basin of Life, which they referred to as the great upper portions of the Tarim Plateau, and they said these were the white children of the Brahma from beyond the sun. And they said they built here also this ring, and they set here these rings. And the Tibetans said that these tall white men who served no gods in their land, they gave effrontery to all gods when they passed through. They conquered the powers of Tibet in that ancient time, and the Turanian stock that lived there said they were afraid to raise a hand. They said there was a mystical power that we do not understand. There was the application of some principle that was beyond them, with which your forebears set a great ring of stone. They set openings and monster sighting stones. They placed niches upon them. They marked and capped them at one time with metal, and they had points of alignment. Now, it is a fact that the alignments of the Do Ring up in Tibet run from the east to the west, and that the functioning patterns of cycle measure follow the great arch and curve of the ascension and declension cycles of the planets in the heavens. And so the great Do Ring circle was set up, and the records of ancient Tibet said when the man who came they were the sons of Yehu, and Yehu is the same personage that the Chinese refer to in the Su King books as the Ad of the Noah of your race. And they tell about how the sons of Noah passed through, or of Jehu, and they tell about how they came and they built this great measuring point in the high plateau of Tibet. And they point out that from this great spot where they had a tremendous view of all the heavens unobstructed, that they made calculations, all which they called mysterious magic unto the mighty Brahma from beyond the sun. But what did they say you were? They write there and said, these Manu, they are the children of light of the Brahma of the sun. Now, I'm going to tell you something interesting. In Britain, we have at Karnak an exact duplication of the Dough Ring in Tibet. Now, you all have heard about Stonehenge. You haven't heard about some of the others. Deva Bari is one of the largest of all the circles of stone that exist in Britain. In fact, that one is over 1,250 foot across, and its inner circles are 350 foot across, and those blocks of stone weigh from 400 to 1,000 tons. And these blocks of stone have all been set in a perfect circle with two inner circles, and they measure two things. They measure the progression of the equinox, they measure the phases of the moon by its alignment measure, and they cover in those stones the position at the equinox of all the major stars from first to fifth magnitude. Now this, my friends, is exactly the way the Dough Ring was set up in Tibet, and the Tibetans say, we don't know anything about this. But we know that the children of the great God from beyond the sun, who walked the earth, built this ring to measure the sky. It's a strange magic, and it's tied into their expectations of things that are going to happen in the midst of the earth. I think it's a rather interesting thing. That over in Persia, we have in the great setup of stones that were found in Persia, an exact duplicate of Stonehenge. Now, this duplicate is not only perfectly aligned, but it's called the Great Circle of Darab in Persia. What do the Persians say about it? Well, the Persians, who know that there was some mongrelization occurred in the ancient past in their race, say that in the ancient times, when the Aryans came into their land and they built this great and mighty measure of the heavens that they might truly worship their God and know his times and his seasons. And so out of the ancient Persian writings, I was pursuing in my library the measure of some of these writings, and they talk about the fact that all the Aryans were the sons of the Eternal, and all the Aryans were the children of light and of the Spirit. And they talk about how you came down out of the high mountains, how your migrations came across the lands of Persia, but how you set this ring to measure the sky. The interesting thing is that in India they knew about these rings. Well, they said that they set also the circle of stones the children of Indra did pass through. The children of Indra have been given the reign over the dusky races. And Indra, the great god from the beyond the stars, has sent his children into the earth to rule with righteousness over the dusky races, and they set their circle of stones. The fact remains that the pagan priests of Hinduism, who later decided that they were going to try to efface the liberty of the white race, tore the stones down, moved them to the city of Madras in India, and incorporated them into the temple of their pagan god. But to do that, they had to split them, they had to break them, they had to move them in pieces, for the priests of Kali in India could not move blocks of stone like the sons of the Most High. I think it a rather significant thing, because out of the ancient writings of the pagan priests of the land of Egypt, they bear continual testimony again concerning you and your race. They tell about how these sons of the great god Amun-Ra, Ra, incarnate in the earth, traveled down out of the high mountains of Amun-Ra to the north. Now, the word Amun-Ra became the word they used for the identification of the great and mighty God of outer space, the great God of the universe, the creator God. If you want to see the impact of your race on Egypt, you want to read, my friends, what the Book of the Dead, as translated by Dr. Budge of the British Museum, has to say about what the Egyptians talked about when they talked about your God and your race. They said that this Amun-Ra, who was incarnate Osiris, Lord of life and the resurrection, and the father of all of you who are the children of Osiris, which white men came into our land. And they said concerning Amun-Ra and concerning the sons of Osiris that they were the children of the one great God, who is a God of spirit, who made all things, who existed before all things, whose every word is truth, whose every power is life, who is the author of creation, and that out of this one and tremendous God came the flow of all things created, and comes the mastery of the earth. And I can show you that in the Book of the Dead. I have one of the original squeeze plate press books of the dead that was ordered by Queen Victoria after the volumes of the original documents were translated by Budge, and they duplicated these plates for the universities of Britain in the time of Queen Victoria's reign. And the hieroglyphics and the key to it is also in our hands, and we have very diligently compared parts of the translated text with Mr. Budge. While Dr. Budge was a great antiquarian and without question one of the great Egyptologists, we never quite know whether the vision spiritually of these men will adapt them to make the translation, or whether sometimes they might be affected by normal slanted ideas of their time. But this can be said concerning Dr. Budge. In his translation of this one of the most ancient of the sacred volumes of Egypt, with all the idolatry and fusion of danger and problem that came in with false religions, these truths stand out so self-evident that they recognized and had transplanted right into their thinking concerning the gods that you serve, the great mighty truths which your race planted there because it told them these things. It's a significant thing that what they know about your God and what the Book of Genesis concerns concerning the Most High God become one and the same. The gods Thoth and the gods Set are symbolic of the satanic kingdom. Though in the translation of the concepts of Thoth, the Egyptians tried to impute to him all the knowledge and wisdom of the chief advisor of the god Set who they serve. And of course, in that instance, they made him the keeper of exceptional wisdom. And like the Anubis, the decider of justice, and all this is woven into their theology. But remember that the documents of Set and Thoth normally are considered to be the doctrines of Lucifer, his fallen angels, of a battle that stirs Egyptians and under false and unguided pharaohs to try to overthrow the power and the yoke of your wisdom. It's a matter of interest that the ancient Egyptians write concerning your race, and they speak concerning it and said, these are the sons of Osiris, the embodiment of Amun-Ra, and that as such, Osiris is the Lord of life and resurrection. Now, Osiris, they said, has not yet walked the earth, but Osiris is going to walk the earth. Lo, they say, we know the time. Now, I think this is a rather interesting thing when they say we know the time when Messiah will come, because there upon the great temple of On was marked a winged orb, and in the center of that orb was a cross. Every time, once in a while, I find somebody with a strange fetish. They take it on their shoulders to fight the cross. They think that the cross is a pagan emblem, and they try to bring out the fact that it's all over the world. Well, the reason why it's all over the world is because you've been all over the world, too. And that mark of that cross was always a symbol and identified with light and with the wings of light, with the seraphims, with the powers of righteousness, and the symbol of the celestial nature, the power of the kingdom of your race. The cross was the symbol of atonement, always was anticipated to be so, the symbol by the very act of God, when he would erase by his own embodied manifestation, by the authority of his own power, at his own will, irrespective of anybody else's decision or desire, any charge that could be laid against his children. Now, you and I don't have to argue for or against the atonement. We don't have to agree whether we like it or don't like it. We don't have to please theological differences. We just can point out to you that this is a historic background of your race to say, this is what our God, our Father in the heavens has said he's going to do. This is the emblem he's going to do it, and he's going to do it whether people like it or not. The most important thing is that it was to have an effect of causing your race to know that every concept, every guilt complex, every fear, every mental turbulence was to be lifted from their consciousness by the assurance that the Father and God who had planted them in the race would bring them forth perfect eventually in his own image with power and glory, and let that mysterious quality that was within them shine forth like light greater than men had ever witnessed or beheld before, until in his own image they would stand forth with the glory of God. Now, I want to tell you this, that in the process of its measure, the false pagan priests, and I'm going to tell you something strange. I have photographs of many of the original plates out of the temples of Egypt, and many things which were found by the early British investigators. I have beautiful photographs, plate after plate after plate. And you know that if you were to look at the priests of Set and Thoth, that first set up the power in opposition to the teachings of your race, For your race went into Egypt before 4000 B.C. Your race went in when Pahoneth or Enoch went in with Job and built those great and mighty altars and temples in the land of Egypt that Josephus bore testimony to that we refer to. And you can check it up where Josephus talks about what your forefathers did, the sons of Seth, in the land of Egypt, or Syrad as he called it. But these are not things which they claim that we did. Not something that Egyptians performed. These were the things that were done by the sons of light, whose migrations down from the high steppes of Asia to the Persian Sea, on the ships of the Phoenicians, who they were, throughout the Pillars of Hercules and up and down the coastlines of the earth, the migrations that came across the mountain ranges and settled themselves in Britain, in Scandinavia, in the hearts of Central Europe, to be added to again by the later migrations of other members of the same race when Israel came out of its captivity, when Shalom and Ezer gave them their liberty, came through the Caucasian Pass and settled into the heart of Gurdon. You know, the Encyclopedia Britannica has a few things still in it that are true. And you will note that it talks about the fact that the Scandinavians, the Anglo-Saxons, all the Teutonic peoples, the Goths and the Visigoths, all of these peoples, it said, are of one race and of one racial stock. That there is a tremendous interchanging of the meaning of words, which even the colloquialisms of their local usage could not totally hide. Then the Encyclopedia Britannica cites that a careful study of the symbols of the gods, many of whom were great men whose memory was revered and who were looked forward to have great influence. So we find that they write concerning these gods, that actually, whether they were thought of as gods or spirits of great rulers, who they said were the son of the mighty God of the heavens, and as sons of the mighty gods of the heavens, were empowered with God life and power to do great exploits, and whose spirits they expected would guide from the great realm of the Valkyrie the destiny of the sons of the same God who dwells in the earth. Now, when you can get the temporal material to confirm the fact that the peoples that make up the great white race rootstock that are Aryan, who migrated in two separate patterns of migration into Europe, and there they settled, were of the same background, of the same race, and of the same stock, and actually those that some thought of as separate gods were actually great figures in their race, who they believed, from the background of tradition, were the sons of a great God because they were the children of God and whose spirits would continue to guide from the land of the Valkyrie. What is the land of the Valkyrie? Well, that's one of the old Teutonic concepts of the great plane of spirit, in which in that dimension there is every comparative condition that we discover in the physical plane, except it is ruled over by righteousness, and herein people have their life and their being and carry forward the exploits of great spiritual power and fervor. And so within this instance, the white race, the Aryan children, if they leave the physical earth in what's known as death, they pass into the land of the Valkyrie. This was known in Scandinavia, it was known in Germany, and it was known among the Druids in Britain. Someone said, well, I thought this was paganism. We may have been touched as we passed through some of these lands and times by some of these factors of belief, but there was one spiritual quality that lie in the seed of your race. It was awaiting the revelation of Messiah, the Christ, the incarnate revelation of God, and it was waiting for what in its Egyptian background was Osiris, Lord of Life, and the resurrection, the embodiment in a physical body of the great God Ra, or the God of Life. Now I know every once in a while that it's hard for some people in mental gymnastics as to recognize that when we talk about the God of Life, and our race talks about the God of Life, that we're talking about a different kind of light than these people round about see when they see the sun shine to a degree. In other words, to them, when we talk about the light and we talk about the illumination, they do not know it's the great spiritual picture of conscious perception in the seat of our minds. They think it's only the illumination of the sun that makes it possible for them to see on a video wavelength the things round about. When we talk about the Son of Righteousness with healing in his wings, we're talking about the incarnate embodiment of the eternal God, and the sign of the crux of the cross was very vital to it. Now, when we gave you the pattern of Egyptian measure, it's a fact that under the vice-regency, supposedly, of the satanic kingdom set under Thoth, we discover that it was exactly the right and proper measure from that vice-regency, started in 3196 B.C., to 3,222 B.C., in which they are 3,122, which were 226 rather, which was the years of the Thoth Regency, to what we know as the year 33 after Christ. Actually, the chronology is much closer as we make these measures concerning the date lines, and you realize that we're almost exactly on right measures at the present time with our present year. Significantly, let me turn for one moment to the book of James. For here James, the brother of Christ, makes a statement of significance, but it passes sometimes into just a poetical license. And James tells us every good and every perfect gift comes down from above, from the Father of life. Every good and every perfect gift comes down from above, from the Father of life. Of his own will begat he us. We are his offspring. We are his household. And he who made all things, who holds all things together by the vibration of his being, is the Father of life. You turn over to the book of John, and in the opening statement concerning the eternal visitation of the Christ, who is the Logos, the Word, the Creator, who emerges, embodies the earth, to give power to his many sons. And in a proper translation of the first chapter of John, he came to the land of his inheritance, and the occupiers received him not, but the main mission he came for was not changed. He came to give power unto the sons of God, who were born not of the will of man, not of the will of flesh, but of the will of God. They were his before he came. He knew them from the beginning. Their names were in the Lamb's Book of Life before the foundation of the world. For this cause was Christ's ministry accomplished. When he spoke of you, he said, "You are the light of the world." He referred to you as such. He said that as the light of the world, he didn't want you to obscure your truth. He didn't want you to try to measure up to an acceptable world standard. He wanted you to let that light shine in the darkness, whether the darkness liked it or whether it understood it. I want you to note this, that in the prophecies of the book of Isaiah, in which God speaks concerning you and the destiny which he has in store for you, he recognizes your migrations and your destiny. You have migrated. Even in the prophecies of this book, you have migrated in the history of the scriptures out to the land of Egypt. You have migrated out of Palestine. You have been in battles and in captivities, and you have emerged through the Caucasus. You've traveled as the Danai. You have left these marks upon the history of Europe. Danube, Dniester, Dan's land, everywhere you can see where Dan traveled. You can see where the other sons of Israel migrated to. You have the history of it. But listen, the prophecy says, "Now listen, O isles, unto me, for truly you were in the isles. Listen unto me, O isles, and hearken, ye people from afar, for Yahweh hath called." Now listen, this is what he said. "Is it a light thing that thou shouldest be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to restore the preserved of Israel? I will give thee for a light unto the nations, that thou mayest be my salvation unto the ends of the earth." Someone said, "Well, he wasn't talking to us." Then what did he say? "Listen, O Isles." Why did he address it as such if he was not talking unto us? For he makes this declaration in the 42nd Psalm concerning your race. "Behold my servant who I uphold, mine elect." He said, "I have put my spirit upon him. He shall bring forth judgment to the nations. I, Yahweh, have called thee in righteousness. I, the Most High God." Beside me there isn't anybody else. So he's not talking to himself. He's talking to you. He said, "I, Yahweh, have called thee in righteousness. I will hold thine hand. I will keep thee. I will give thee for a covenant unto the nations and a light unto all the peoples." Why? Because you've got a spiritual capacity that God placed within you that he promised he was going to bring to fruition. He said, "I am going to do this. This is my covenant, and I'm the Most High God, and I, Yahweh, thy God, I raise thee up. You are going to be a light unto the nations because you are the children of light." The Apostle Paul said, "We are the children of light, not the children of darkness." But so also said the peoples of India, though their gods fought against yours. So also said the peoples of Tibet, though they still worship the darkness, that you were the children of light. So also said the Egyptian, that you were the children of light. And in your travels, the testimony of the Maya were one and the same, that you were the children of light. You were the sons of the phoenix bird. and that the Phoenix was the great and majestic one. And as such, they recognized you as the children of light. Toltec civilization referred to the white man when he came in a period long before the resettling and exploring of America as the children of light. This follows, and it follows, a very careful and significant story. You know, over in India, in the Mahabharata, which is one of the writings of India concerning your race, they talk about the attempt, under the commands of the god Kali, that they were to absorb your race from the face of the earth. They tell about the fact that a great battle had been fought between certain pirate sea-going chieftains and a king over your race that ruled in Israel. Now they refer to you as Ivory. And the Indians always referred to you as Ivory, which are the sons of Heber, or the kingdom of the Heber, and the word Hebrew or Ivory was attached to your race. Therefore, the king that they refer to, who had at that time ships of Tarshish. Now, Tarshish was always used for sea-going people, sea-going navies. Tarshish was used for Venetian cities as well, showing the relationship of the word Tarshish as one of the descendants of Noah, who was a seafaring man, the seafaring cities and ports. Now, the king that was on the throne at the time that he had ships of a navy upon the sea that was attacked by these Assyrian and pagan sea-going galleons was none other than King David. And we are told that in the history that the Indians write that the instruction of their gods had to be been to find a way to eventually absorb the Ivory, lest they break down the powers of the gods who they serve. So indirectly, the attack which was made upon the ships of David by the chieftains that came down from the steps was trying to conquer and take over, of course, the seagoing power of David's fleet. Well, there was a king who was a youthful king, and he was king of Tyre. And this great seagoing city, somewhat island province as well, was one that was tied to India in its thinking. Aware that the great wisdom and power of your race came from secrets and mysteries revealed by the God of Light, they used it in the building of the great temples, the mighty pyramids, the levitation of great stones, a science and a wisdom known in what you might have called a primitive hour, but one that was not without its wisdom, its knowledge, its mathematics, and its application of force. So it was that they referred to that wisdom and that knowledge, and they referred to your race, and the word Mason or Masanos, and the ancient wisdom that is attached to it, followed down through generations. They knew that there were wise men still among the Hebrews. So it was that the king of Tyre and all the rulers of India and Asia had decided that they must break the power, or absorb it, or penetrate it, or fuse it. Or eventually, the sons of Indra, still using it, the Phoenicians, the Israelites, the Hebrew, were going to take over the world for their God. When David passed away, and there came his son Solomon to the throne, there was to be fulfilled a great desire in the life of David. David wanted to see a great and beautiful temple of great splendor built to his God. He wanted to honor him. He wanted all the mysteries, all the symbols, all the furniture, the tabernacle, and everything of great value built inside this temple. And God had told David, David, thou hast not been a master of the wisdom and the philosophies, but thou hast loved me with a pure heart, and you're a man after my own heart. Therefore, David, thou hast been a mighty warrior in the defense of Israel. Thy son, whose kingdom thou hast made safe, shall become wise in all the knowledge and all the wisdom and all the spiritual laws and all the symbols, and will oversee the building of my house. And he will see that these things are placed within. You know, I was disgusted yesterday. I was reviewing some Sunday school material for use for Sunday school children. And it was coming out of the supposed fundamental and orthodox school. And it had the slides and the phonograph records, and it had the material that is now being applied for youth instruction. And when they came down to David, they only showed about one picture of David, but they left out everything concerning his victory over the Philistines, his struggles for the kingdom of Israel, and his great and mighty acts of faith. They just said that God was unhappy with David because he was a military man, and he would seek to make war. And God would have nothing to do with David as to his aspirations because he was a man of war, and that God liked Solomon because he was a man of peace. And because of this, he loved all people, and he didn't make any differentiation between anybody around about him. You see what they're trying to do? Now, that's the kind of propaganda line that brainwashed from the children of our race the things they should know. The great patriarchs, the mighty heroes of our race that God raised up, that stood in defense against the pagans who would have absorbed this and wiped this out, are to be forgotten about. You're to teach the children nothing about violence or anything about struggle, even in the cause of right. You're to get them to be ready to surrender, to be pacifists, and to show that all divine blessing rested upon the pacifists. But this is not true. In fact, the study of what God had to say about David, God called David a man after his own heart. David was human. David erred. David's transgressions have been known and flashed before all the world. But God could still look at David and say, here's a man after my own heart, a man of courage and of faith that stands before the darkness and would stand alone in the gap if it were necessary. No, it was not because David had been a warrior, and as a warrior was looked down upon by God, but because he had not applied himself, nor had he the time, to learn the mysteries and the wisdom that had been known by his son Solomon, who was better adapted to build his temple. Let me tell you this, that temple is the tabernacle symbol of this body you live in. Its inner court is your celestial consciousness and your spiritual being. That's the Holy of Holies. Its inner court is where your soul consciousness evaluates what the Spirit gathers in the Holy of Holies. The outer court, the physical body, where you put into operation before all men the witnessing testimony of the other two fields, and the mind or brain functioning here becomes the third witness. So it was that the priest would stand around the molten sea, and when the vision was received by the high priest, the waters would ripple. And they would behold as they looked into it, as one would look into a crystal ball and watch something develop if that ever took place. They would see the vision of the thing that was paramount in the question and the answer of the high priest. Now this was in the operations of the mystery of Israel when the Spirit moved and the Shekinah glory hovered over the temple. And don't you worry, my friends, in the day that they finally dedicated that temple, the Shekinah glory came down and filled that temple and covered it with such a radiant light that all the nations round about heard about how the God of light had crowned the temple of the sons of light with the mighty glory of his presence. The temple was completed. The day for the opening of the temple came. All the majesty of Israel's armies gathered around, its people in their ranks. The trumpeters sounded the call, the great opening of the doors, the hanging of the great veil that was to go across the holy place. And the temple of God was suddenly filled with a radiant glory. We are told that the glory of the Lord shone round about, that the light like the light of the sun was obscured by the glory that shone around that place. The emanations, the vibrations, the effulgent glory filled the whole house until all men fell upon their face before it. And here came the king of Tyre. Here came Hiram and all his pagan workers. And they came down to this place. And the priest of Israel said, no, Hiram cannot come. No man except the man of our race can enter into this temple. No one can step inside this light unless he die. Better that we kill him now with the point of our weapons than that this fire consume him here. And Hiram said, I helped to build this temple. Solomon said, yes, he helped. The priest of Israel said, thou, Solomon, shall not enter this temple if this pagan comes in. Solomon may have been king of Israel, but there was a greater king above all. And to bear his opposition to this priesthood would have meant the disillusion of his kingdom, and that early. So the king of Tyre went home. And with him went all of his workmen. You know what they write in India today? That the children of light, the sons of their God Yahweh, the ancient Hebrew, the sons of Indras, who our forefathers said would always try to rise to rule the dusty people. They barred us from the temple, though we helped to build it. They would not admit our gods. And then they told the story. Every one of these who marched in the company of Hiram carried little idols of Brahma, Vishnu, Siva, Kali, and the serpent goddess. They had these little emblems. They were carrying them inside of their tunic. They were going to bring them into the house of Yahweh so it could be the house of all gods. Oh, you say, well, that's just an old historic story. It's an old tale. It doesn't have anything to do with this. Yes, my friends, it does. It proves they knew that you were the sons of light, the sons of glory, and that the glory of your God shone round. They wanted to pollute it as they've come into the United Nations and brought you into that temple of fallacy to pollute it today. They are today trying to mongrelize your faith. They're trying to mongrelize your race. They're trying to mongrelize your theology. They want to put out the light. There is no other reason for this attempted policy and program of integration. one of the reasons why today modern nations should go back and relook over their pattern. George Washington understood this. He was not only Grand Master of the Masonic Lodge in the United States, but he was the Son of Light, and they wouldn't go beyond the seventh degree. And these other degrees that later came in all have been touched with some pagan concept. In that day, the one man they hated most was Pike. For the Morals and Dogma, which is one of the great foundation books in the study of Masonry today, was edited by Pike and is filled with all this pagan Asiatic material that Solomon was not permitted to let come into the temple. Someone said, what do you think of Masonry today? I think it's one of the great mysterious light-carrying symbolistic programs of our race. This time white men rose and cleansed it. I think it of great significance, and we want to add this in closing. You serve in your temple. As that great temple of the God of Light to the Sons of Light was a great mighty symbol of where man, his race, the priesthood of God met with him for guidance, so also you are a son of God. You are dwelling in this physical temple. Your soul consciousness can serve in this outer temple with cognition. It can search the spiritual ramparts of the celestial plane with spiritual guidance. The soul can draw its witness, and you serve in this temple. And that's why the Spirit of God said your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, and that you are the sons of the Most High. We turn then for one moment of thinking, as the Apostle Paul tells us this, and Peter said, you're all living stones built together into a great and mighty holy temple unto the Most High God. And the Apostle Paul is instructed, your bodies are the temple of the Holy Ghost. Therefore, he says, what fellowship hath light with darkness? He says, come out from among them and be ye separate or be ye segregated. For what fellowship hath light with darkness? The temple of God, Yahweh, and the temple of idols, pagans, witch doctors, Negro, Chinese, and Asiatics. Someone said, I don't like that. It's not important. It's just important that you're right. I want to bring this to your conscious attention. Over here we have these instructions which come out of the Declaration of the Most High, one of the mysteries that have been hidden from all ages, to whom God now makes known unto you what is the riches of His glory. What is the mystery among all nations? You want me to tell you what it is? Paul tells you, it's Christ in you, the hope of great glory, a light unto the ends of the earth. That, my friends, is part of the secret. I want to tell you something in closing which is of great significance. Twice this week I had a chance to speak and talk with a great and brilliant medical doctor who had specialized in the field of psychiatry. Generally speaking, as this man himself gave admission to, when he in the great medical college he attended, the predominant number of psychiatrists were enemies of our race and of our faith, and they had nothing in common with the way we think. He said most of the doctors studying psychiatry were Jews, and it was a rather hard experience to go through this particular branch of study. But this is what he had to say. He said, since I have gone into practice, and he's one of the outstanding psychiatrists in our nation today, he said, I have discovered many things. He said, I have been especially, of course, dealing with what we consider to be the disease of the mind, all of which has to start and function where men think. Now, he said, there's something that exists in the white race that doesn't exist anywhere else on the face of the earth. We know that. That's what the scripture calls spiritual seed. That's that celestial light body that lives inside of you that can ride to the land of the Valkyrie, the planes of spirit, or any other dimension the Father's made. That, my friends, is what Jesus meant when he said they that came down out of heaven can ascend into it. They can go anywhere in the universe because they have the capacities of the children of the Father. But there's something down inside of you. And that celestial consciousness of yours is the wavelength of the thinking of the Most High God. In that soul consciousness, there's the ability to enter that spiritual guidance for the Spirit and draw guidance and inspiration. And it absorbs it all automatically at times. There is the physical range of the brain, the mechanical contrivance with which the soul directs the body and which it produces through the senses and the evaluation of what it sees and feels. Now, significantly, as this psychiatrist said, there is something that's inside our race. He didn't have the spiritual picture, and yet in part he almost did, because while we talked to him, he did. He said, this is the strange thing. He said, the reason why people are getting sick, he said, 30% of all the sickness we have today in America starts where men think, and they get real sick
and they get so sick that the toxic conditions of their body is the result of nerve impetuses that cause muscles to contract and to not properly release and expand and create toxic situations. He says situations that affect every organ and gland of the body, many of them, 30% of them, start at the point of thinking consciousness. Now you say, what makes men feel bad? Well, he says, you can go through all kinds of things. He says, what makes a person feel so bad? What causes this? He says, I'll tell you what it is. There are certain things that you know, whether you know them or not. There are certain things which are adapted to you, whether you know they're adapted to you or not. That's why he says, I try to probe way back to the childhood or some spot in this person's life to see if they got any idea what it was that they're disturbed about or what it is that disturbs the most. Now, he said, it's a natural thing, and this I know, and this every other psychiatrist knew. We learned while we were studying that the mental capacities and the energies that could be delivered was much higher in the white race than in any other people. We learned that the Negro was of substrata and that his intellectual ability was almost on the animal level. Could be trained, could be developed, but never had the normal capacity reflexes that belonged to the white man. We learned that, and we learned the differentiation between the thinking patterns of other races. Now he says, I know that doctors don't want to talk about this because this isn't a socially accepted program. When we deal with what the world order or what the United Nations and or what the educators of today say we are to say and think. He says, I'll tell you what the trouble is. He says, people have been raised with knowledge and they have a feeling of certain things which are right. They have their own mechanical wavelength of thinking. And now they're being told that all these others are equal. They're being told that they should readjust their thinking that they are equal. That they should readjust their thinking until they're willing to let their children marry into these other races. To readjust their thinking until they're willing to tear down this flag and put up the spider web in the reef. Until all these things go on. Now he said, you know what happens? People get it out of Life magazine, they get it out of Reader's Digest, they get it out of Carnet, they get it in school, they get it out of the newspapers, they see it on television, and always a little subtle intimation. That if you're not willing to think this way, you're not being a Christian. If you're not willing to think this way, you're being antisocial. You're not going along with the great intellectual level of our time. And so something that I scientifically know is an error, and these people subconsciously know is an error, they are forced to compress while they give assent, even instruction to their children, that they are to comply with this principle that's error. And a woman sends her child off to school and says, now you be nice to the little Negro boy that goes to school down the street. And she's subconsciously worried that someday they might marry. She's afraid to come out and say too much because the church will deny it. Or the school will say she's antisocial. He said, you know that in our great cities, especially in Detroit, in Chicago, in Philadelphia, he said 35% to 40% of all the cases which psychiatrists have to deal with have arisen over the racial crisis and the racial problems that have been furthered by fears and conditions brought on by integration in the false strata of our time. He said, now this is what happens. People are trying to make themselves say and think what internally is a revolt by spirit against. I talked to a man the other day who is an official in the Kiwanis Club in his community. He said, Dr. Swift, he says, I'm in a problem. He said, you know, he says, I know what's right. That's the first admission. And I'm program chairman for my Kiwanis Club, and they're all nice fellas, they're all businessmen. Most of them go to the Methodist Church, he said, that are in our Kiwanis Club, in our county. But anyhow, I'm the program chairman. And he said, when I have tried to bring in things which would show them the preservation of private enterprise, preservation of our businesses and all that, I'm being reminded by these nice fellows that this is an international. That we've got to recognize we're a part of a world community now. That we've got to put aside empty patriotisms, empty nationalisms. They tell me that I'm antisocial. And they tell me it's going to hurt my business. And he said, more than that, he says, now I want to bring in some good things. I'm program chairman, I can bring in what I please. These men don't know. They've been taught everything contrary to this. And if I do what I know is the right thing to do, why, it may hurt my business, I may be ostracized by all these good people. Now, what do I do? I said, you're on the road to being a sick man. You're on the road of being a sick man. He said, what? I said, because you're battling the battle of frustration. You are a son of light, and you know the light. And you're suppressing the light because the darkness doesn't like the light to shine. And it's not only going to make you a sick man, but you're going to discover something. That Kiwanis Club didn't bring one man into your store. Most of the public that goes by don't even know you're in the Kiwanis Club. They didn't see the emblem in the window. You might lose the trade of a few of these merchants, and probably you wouldn't lose that. But the fact is, if you gave them the truth, if you provided speakers to come in that are qualified, that laid down the truth, you might win some. Because they're members of your race. I said, the strategy of the enemy is to make error look so right. Well, it seeks to fuse into the kingdom of light that we put the light out so we don't embarrass the darkness. That, my friends, is your great problem. Let me tell you something, and some of you may already be aware of it. When you, as a child of God, know the truth, bear testimony to the truth, when you give assent to it, when you roll back your fears, Calvary has taken place and taken care of the error. The resurrection has given you promise of immortality. The righteousness of the laws of God have borne testimony in the fruit of your race. And when you think this way and declare the truth, you feel like you're breathing the clearest of air. You feel like you're drinking the coolest of clear water. You walk as the princes of God in the midst of the earth. It is not a point of false pride, but you look with pity upon those round about whose minds have been closed and locked up in error, who subconsciously are aware that this isn't what they really would like. It's not the thing they really believe, but the thing they've got to make themselves think they believe because the world order has been telling them so. The sons of light are the hope of the world, not the darkness. Let me tell you that when the sons of light walk forward in the absolute purity of their vision, when they walk forward in the strength of their testimony, they walk with freedom that makes God's noblemen stand out as the light of the world. And I'm going to assure you this, irrespective of what you witnessed in your time, God is about to let that light so develop with a miracle as great upon you as came down upon that temple in the days of its opening, until that wavelength of divine aura will be seen upon you that the ancients used to talk about when they said these are the children of light and the glory of their God shines upon them. It's going to shine upon you as it has never been witnessed to the earth since the fall of Adam. And I'm going to tell you this, that as children of light, your wanderings and your migrations are tied to biblical facts concerning its history and concerning your destiny. And I challenge you this, if you want health, if you want vitality, if you want divine blessing of a God who's never failed, then, my friends, never bend your thinking to conform to the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind with the revelation out of that Holy of Holies that belongs to the children of light.
You have been listening to a message by the late Dr. Wesley A. Swift, from his sermon titled History of the Sons of Light. If you would like a complete tape or CD of this talk, ask for it by name with the number S60 and send a donation to cover our costs and help with radio time. Thank you.
We pray that your spiritual ears have received today's message and that you are fed with strong meat relevant to solving the needs of our nation and Christian civilization everywhere. Herald of Truth is sponsored by Kingdom Identity Ministries through the financial support and prayers of listeners like you who love the truth of God's Word and want to see it broadcast throughout the land to awaken His people. If you would like a tape of today's message, including other programs from this week, tell us the date and station to which you are listening and send a donation to cover our costs plus help with radio time to Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602. We would appreciate donations made by our international listeners to be in U.S. funds. For a free introductory packet of information, including our doctrinal statement of beliefs, plus lists of books and tapes to aid you in your study of biblical truth, write Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, USA. Or request this material by calling 870-741-1119. That's 870-741-1119. Visit our internet website by going to www.kingidentity.com. Type www.kingidentity.com. We invite you to listen regularly to Herald of Truth broadcast for more dynamic messages proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom at this same time and station.